All right, Alexander, let's talk once again about what's going on in Sweden and the CV, and let's compare it to what's happening in Denmark. I think this is this could be an interesting comparison, looking at the two Scandinavian countries and how each of them has been handling the CV pandemic. And obviously, Sweden is being watched by the whole world, really, to see how they're going to how this herd immunity is working out for them. And as the pandemic has been going along, it does seem like the government is starting to enact some more restrictions, slight more restrictions, but they still haven't gone the way of pretty much 99% of all countries in Europe, with the exception of Belarus. And you may add some information that you have in Belarus, by the way, as well. And so it looks like Denmark will be easing some of those restrictions that they have in place. On it'll begin on the 15th, I believe, April, and it'll run through all the way to May, and it'll be a gradual easing of restrictions, because it looks like Denmark has been handling the CV pandemic fairly well. Of course, you're looking at Sweden with a population of roughly 10, 11 million, and Denmark with a population of roughly 6 million. And you've got all the information as to the infections and how they're handling it. Those numbers, you have those on your computer screen as well. And you'll take us into the story with Sweden compared with Denmark, Alexander.
Indeed, let's actually look at total numbers of deaths. Denmark, the total number of deaths in Denmark is 237.
As of Thursday,
the 9th of April. The total number of confirmed deaths in Sweden as of Thursday, the 9th of April, is 809.
So 237
and 809. So in the case of Sweden, it's far more, obviously, than in Denmark. And they're two countries which have gone in diametrically opposite directions. Both are Scandinavian. Both are very similar cultures in many things. I mean, there are differences. I mean, Sweden is a very big country. Denmark is a smaller country, which also consists of lots of islands. But, you know, culturally, they're very similar. And nonetheless, they approach this in a completely different way. Denmark did the things that we've all, you know, other European countries have done, other countries around the world have done. It's had quarantines, it's had people, self-isolating, it's had, you know, very tough restrictions on social, on movement, and it's tested extensively. It's done all those sort of things. And it's been successful, or it appears to have been successful, so far as we can see, in containing the spread of illnesses, at least judged by the number of deaths. Sweden has pursued a diametrically different policy. It would be true to say that it has done some things that other countries have done. I mean, it's closed most of the secondary schools. It's restricted big meetings of people. So you can't have meetings of more than 50 people, for example, in Sweden. At least it's against the law to. And, they've encouraged social distancing. But nonetheless, they haven't done anything like the tough responses that you see in other countries like Denmark. And they've had many, many more deaths than Denmark. Now, I know an awful lot of people are going to say that there are other reasons for this and that this chain difference isn't as marked as it should be. But perhaps another point to make is that Denmark does seem to be on top of this problem. In Sweden, it's ramping up now at an accelerating rate. The curve is becoming much steeper. Now, that should be concerning, and it may be the case that the Swedish government is itself starting to have doubts, because they've now started, they've piloted through the Swedish parliament a bill which apparently allows the Swedish government to impose a state of emergency. So we see different approaches. Now, you know, these are two countries, they're two very similar countries. Sweden has been held up by many people as the example of the right way to go. People who are very, very skeptical about whether the requirements to, you know, remain indoors are appropriate. But I would have said that these facts tend to argue against the Swedish model and tend to argue much more strongly for the model of actually imposing the kind of restrictions that we have seen across Europe being imposed. I'm going to add just one other thing, by the way, which is about the politics of this. I'd previously argued in various programs we've done about Sweden, that this originates from the Swedish Health Service, which is independent of the government. I've had various people from Sweden pointing out to me that the chief epidemiologist of the Swedish Health Service, as far as they're concerned, is clearly someone who is obviously a supporter of the present Swedish government, and that the Swedish government is hiding behind him in order to implement a policy which they know is popular with most Swedish people, and that it's in fact a political, not a science-driven policy that the Swedes have been following. That is something people in Sweden have been telling me. If others want to disagree, well, that's again, you know, they're welcome to. But we are setting out the facts as we are being provided them. And frankly, to me, they look very convincing.
You mean Anders Tegnell?
I mean, absolutely. That's exactly whom I mean. That in fact, he's a front man for the Swedish government. He's the expert, you know, that's put up to speak to the people and tell them all of these things that the Swedish government wants him to say. So they're able to say, oh, actually, we're not imposing all these restrictions because we're following the advice of the chief epidemiologist of the health service. But in fact, it's very much the policy that the left-wing government of Sweden wants to follow, the social democratic government of Sweden itself wants to follow. So it's a political, not a science-led policy framework.
Yeah, and a lot of times these scientists that I imagine every country is putting on TV and putting as the face of the strategy to handle CV, a lot of these guys are also partisan. I mean, many of them. I know here where I am, the scientists. It's really interesting to see the scientists are actually running public policy and not the politicians. It's very, very troubling to see that. Very troubling to see that. And I think Sweden is probably a perfect example of this, because from what I understand, Anders Tegnell is also of the socialist left,
yes,
leaning, and he's very much for this type of herd immunity,
yes,
program. Yes. He's supporting it as well. So that's dangerous.
Yes. Which, by the way, if you know, this isn't just he's left-leaning, but of course the British government, which also had a herd immunity policy, its chief medical officers were also supporting it. I mean, they took the same sort of line. Of course, they eventually changed their policy, but these are very politicized people. You have scientists who are themselves, let's be straightforward about this, They are also political people at the same time. They're not just pure scientists coming along and giving us pure scientific judgments. I wonder whether such a thing is even possible, given the realities of the modern world. But regardless of whether that is so or not, these people are not pure scientists. And that's, I think, been made very clear to me about the chief epidemiologist in Sweden. Various people from Sweden have written to me about this, and they provided me deluges of information to confirm that. So I accept this as true.
It reminds me a lot of the climate change debate, in that you have so many scientists who are proponents of climate change, but they're so ideologically driven that it always makes you wonder, is what they're advocating based on science, or is it based on this new type of religion? which is called climate change, which I think really has morphed into more of a religion and a cult. And I know there's probably a lot of people who are, you know, climate change activists who are going to flip out hearing me say that. Sorry, I think climate change has definitely moved into the religious category of things and not so much about science anymore. But Alexander, you can comment on that, but I also have some other statistics that some people in Sweden sent me. For example, a small town, Sörmland, which has 250,000 inhabitants, has now had 78 people die.
Yes.
And the number of deaths are increasing in Sweden. It seems like they're increasing by 30, 40% a day.
That's right.
I mean, you're right. I mean, the curve, so Denmark, I guess if I had to visualize it, I don't have it in front of me right now, Denmark would be kind of on that part of the curve where it's now starting to trend down, hopefully.
I think so.
While
I think
Sweden is
flattered.
Sweden is about to lift off.
Exactly. It's vertiginous. It's zooming upwards. And this is getting extremely disturbing. And I think I gather more and more people in Sweden itself are starting to get very, very worried. And I think that, you know, if this continues and there's a radical change of direction, I think there's going to be something of a political reaction in Sweden, because it's not as if this policy, this is another point that a number of people have made to me in Sweden, has been uncontroversial in Sweden. Many of the opposition parties have questioned it. Many doctors have questioned it. I listened to a long podcast of a Swedish doctor, and I mean, a person who clearly knew what he was saying. He was, again, questioning the entire logic of this, and he made some very powerful points. He said one of the things that the assumption behind this policy was that asymptomatic people, that's people who have become infected but who are not showing, who are not ill, that they can't spread the infection. In fact, there is now a huge amount of information from around the world that people like that can spread the infection. But the Swedish authorities, apparently, until very recently, and perhaps even now still, are in denial about this. And he was providing examples of people from Sweden who'd holidayed in the Alps, because apparently Sweden took no steps to control or monitor people who were coming back to Sweden from outside Sweden, and who'd been in infected areas, and some of them heavily infected areas, and to get these people to go into, you know, to go into self-isolation and quarantine so that they would keep track on what they were doing. Anyway, a lot of Swedes went to the Alps for skiing. Apparently, the Alps, the Italian Alps especially, became our major centres of infection. Yet when they went back to Sweden, they were allowed to roam around entirely freely. And he said some of them were doctors. And, you know, they went straight back into their jobs in hospitals. Some of them went and treated people who'd had all kinds of conditions which had compromised their immune systems. So you have people from a heavily infected area in the Alps coming and treating people in hospitals who were themselves with severely compromised immune systems. And he was saying in this podcast, this is completely illogical behavior. He wasn't able to explain it or understand it because it seemed completely irrational to him. So, you know, again, I know there are many people who are strongly pushing back on all of this and who've been citing Sweden as examples. What I'm saying is this policy is not uncontroversial in Sweden at all. There are many people in Sweden who dispute it, and the trend in the figures is not supporting at all what the Swedish government has done, and it seems to have been a much more politicized policy than a scientifically led policy, and was so from the outset.
Scientists should not be making political decisions like this. No. Scientists should not be dictating public policy. That's my opinion on that. They should be advising, but they shouldn't be dictating policy. Alexander, you are in a country that went the herd immunity route changed course.
Yes.
I think the results have been disastrous. Comment on that. Yes. And Denmark seems to be over the worst. Seems to be.
Yes.
I'm just saying what's from the recent data that I've seen seems to be. Norway also seems to be handling it well, as is Finland.
Yes.
Why has Norway, Denmark, and Finland gone one route and Sweden a different? It's very perplexing. It's really interesting why that happened. So comment on these things that I've said to finish out the video.
Yes. I mean, first of all, going to Britain, I mean, we had exactly the same policy in Britain as they had in Sweden. Here, the argument was, you know, we're all going to be infected at some point. So that would give us herd immunity if we become infected quickly. And what we then need to do is to try and protect people who are vulnerable, and this would be fine. And this was scientifically supported. I mean, all these scientists, including, as I said, the country's chief medical officer, coming along and saying this is all based on science. And the government was always saying it's based on science. And then, of course, you started to get studies, not just the famous Imperial College study, which is perhaps, I mean, it is a crucially important study, but there have been others too. Lots of other scientists in universities, and Britain has, by the way, some very talented epidemiologists started to come along and say, this isn't going to work. It's a very, very bad policy. And of course, you also started to get alarm signals coming out of the National Health Service, in which people were saying, look, if this goes on, we're going to be overwhelmed because we cannot cope with 500,000 people being ill with the corona infection all at the same time. We just aren't able to cope with that. So then the government suddenly does this screeching stop and U-turn and starts imposing many of the same policies and restricting movement that we're seeing across Europe. But of course, the trouble with waiting is that by this point, the infection has already spread across the population and has taken hold. And now there are reports, and I hope these reports are not true, that the situation in Britain is basically out of control because it was done so late and because many of these restrictions are still being very erratically enforced, and that we will also have a situation where we will have infection rates and death rates comparable to Italy's and Spain's, or possibly even worse. There's an American university study which says that Britain might end up having around 40% of the deaths in Europe, which would be a terrible thing. I hope that isn't true, but it would be a terrible thing. And of course, one minor thing that happened, but maybe not so much, one serious thing that happened is that many people within the British elite didn't take it seriously. So we had Prince Charles being infected. We had Boris Johnson being infected. We had our chief medical officer being infected. We had our health minister being infected. We had the a cabinet office minister, Michael Gove. We don't know whether he's been infected or not, but he's had to go into self-isolation because he's come into contact with people who've been infected. So we have had also a serious problem at the heart of government with the prime minister for a time, for several days, in intensive care. The latest word is that he's come out of intensive care. He's now in hospital, but there's still concerns about him, and he's still not running the government as he should be. So this didn't turn out well in Britain, and perhaps it's increasingly looking as if it's not turning out well at all in Sweden either. So that's what I wanted to say about Sweden. Why did the other Scandinavian countries go down a different route? I don't know. I mean, there are cultural differences. And Swedish is the second language in Finland. I mean, I've seen this for myself, actually. It's very strange that you see signs all over Helsinki, which are in Finnish and Swedish, even though the actual proportion of the population of Finland that is actually of Swedish ethnicity is actually very small. But the elite, a lot of the elite people in Finland identify culturally and linguistically with Sweden. And Norway was also for a very, very long time, basically part of Sweden. I mean, the two countries were in a union, but Sweden was always the dominant part of this union. But one thing I've heard also is that within Sweden, there's a very conformist culture. People tend to believe and trust what authorities tell them. The Swedish authorities, the Swedish government, didn't want to impose a lockdown because they knew that would be unpopular with a country where a lot of people apparently like being outdoors. And they also perhaps had ideological hostility to this, that, you know, they felt this was being impinging on people's freedom. And they were trusted when they told people to follow that course. I've also heard something else, by the way, that the current Swedish government isn't apparently very popular in Sweden. It's a government that's allowed lots of migrants to come into Sweden. It didn't want to, a lot of Swedes were unhappy with that. So it didn't want to test the patience of more Swedes even more by imposing a lockdown. I've heard this. You know, what can I say? I mean,
I think you nailed it.
Lot of Swedish people tell me this. So
I think you nailed it there. At the end of the day, all these things are always political decisions. Yeah. And I do know that there is a very vibrant and growing sovereigntist national identity movement
in Sweden
that is growing and actually is taking power as we speak.
Yes.
And I think the current government didn't want to rock the boat and jeopardize their position.
Yes. I mean,
this is my take. Viewers and commenters can give us their take. That's my reading on it.
It makes sense to me. I would add something else, by the way, which is that, of course, if this health crisis does explode in Sweden, there will be a political crisis. I mean, that I'm sure. And that could very well have dramatic effects on Sweden's future political orientation. So Sweden is already an interesting country. Remember, we've also done videos in the past about the crime wave in Sweden, which the Swedish authorities are also in denial about, partly because it's linked to the migrant inflows.
Yeah.
So a political crisis in Sweden may be on the horizon. And given what an important country Sweden is, even though it's relatively small, but it does have a huge amount of political influence, we need to keep an eye on it. We will let the jury.
It's very much a political and cultural bellwether.
Yes, I would agree.
In the West.
I would agree. Can I just add, because you mentioned Belarus very, very, can I just talk very briefly about Belarus?
Yeah, you have some info.
Is another country which was holding out, even though the political system in Belarus could hardly, or at least the political culture in Belarus could hardly be more different, with a sort of strong man leader in Mr. Lukashenko. But what has happened is they too followed a policy of not having lockdowns, and apparently that's been quietly reversed. Now, again, it's not been widely reported, but there has been a massive change of policy now. We were getting reports about a week ago that they sent a desperate plea for help to Russia. The Russians have now officially confirmed that is true, and that they are apparently increasingly there on the ground, and they're carrying out testing, and they're ramping up tests, and they're doing all kinds of things on the ground in Belarus, which the Belarus media doesn't really like to discuss very much. But there has been apparently a major switch in direction in Belarus. It's just not being reported very extensively. So I just wanted to touch on that briefly.
Yeah, because I'm glad you did.
Because as I said, Sweden and Belarus have been cited by people as the two outliers. Belarus isn't really that anymore. And in Sweden, it all seems to be going wrong.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I mean, in Sweden, I think there's only so much, when you mentioned political change, I think there's only so much a populace can take.
Well, indeed.
You know, going from migrants to now the CV crisis, there's only so much they can take. And sooner or later, there will be political consequences.
Yes.
And Belarus, you know, my two cents real quickly, and you can comment on this. I think it's very important to point out the distinction of Sweden was actually a strategy, political strategy of a herd immunity.
Yes.
Where Belarus was Lukashenko just trying to pretend that this thing doesn't exist. And you know, is a complete farce, and I think that was completely misguided on Lukashenko.
It was completely misguided. I mean, he gave a very interesting and very defensive interview to TASS, by the way, which I read, in which he basically tried to justify what he did. It's a very defensive interview, very unlike him, in which he basically said that he did it in order to try and keep Belarus independent, because the only way Belarus could be independent is by keeping its economy running. So this was his rationalization of it for it. Well, there may be something in that, but whatever his reasons, it was a denial of reality, and it's caught up with him, and it's meant that he's had to turn to the Russians in a very, very big way, which, by the way, is what I always thought would happen, but that's another story.
Turkey did the same thing. I think was hiding the seriousness of the rate of infection in Turkey because he did not want the wheels of the economy to fall off.
Yes. Yes. I mean, Turkey having had, you know, major financial crisis last year and again at the beginning of this year. So, I mean, he's very focused on trying to keep the economy going. But as I understand it, the infection there is now completely out of control. It's now, the figures there are exploding in ways that are just, you know, frankly scary. So again, he was in denial, and it's caught up with him too. And by the way, he's doing exactly the same thing that Lukashenko is doing. He's calling Putin and trying to get Russia to help him.
Incredible. All right, Alexander McCurse, editor-in-chief of the Tehran, thank you very much. Guys, if you like this video, click on the subscribe button down below, click on the notifications bell, and smash that like. Please donate to us on PayPal, Patreon, and Subscribestar as well. Your donation really helps us out a lot. And also download the Telegram app and subscribe to us on Telegram. We post everything we do in the Duran community on Telegram. And also go to theduranshop.com and pick up some magic mugs and some polo shirts.
Indeed, magic mugs and polo shirts. But also, and most importantly at this time, our ebooks. We've got four ebooks on Russiagate, Ukrainegate, Epstein, and Brexit. And every cent and euro and that we make from the sale of these ebooks, we are now providing to charities, to charitable funds that support health workers, specifically at the moment in the US, but we're looking to expand that to other places. The fund that we're supporting in the US is one which supports health workers by providing them food from caterers who are also in terrible conditions as a result of all the lockdowns. We're trying to do what we can at the Duran within our resources to support health workers who are right at the absolute front line in trying to contain this crisis. And I have to say, I've said on previous programs that my views about this health crisis changed. And I didn't take it terribly seriously at the beginning. Around the end of February, March, I started to shift. And it was hearing terrible stories from health workers increasingly that has hardened my views about the way in which things are. I'm getting all kinds of information from people, especially in the NHS in Britain, over the course of March and April, about how bad the situation is in the hospitals now and how hard it is for them to work, how many of them are at risk of falling ill, how many of them are exhausted dealing with a situation that is still only barely under control. But it is still under control, and we should support them to the extent we can. And that's why we're doing this, while we're doing this, while we're, as I say, providing the money from our ebooks, which are great in themselves, may I add. They're enormously enlightening on these subjects, but everything that we're making from them is going to support the people on the front lines, in the health workers on the front lines, and in the United States, the small caterers who are in severe trouble. And of course, we do have our own shop. We have our amazing things that Alex was talking about. We have our wonderful Duran mugs, which you see here. As I've discussed in other programs, I'm the world expert, the number one world expert on the subject of mugs. I say that without any hesitation. I've been drinking coffee and tea and gigantic quantities since I was at school. I have my vast collections of both various teas from around the world. I even have several coffees from around the world. And I have run through mugs at a vast quantities throughout my life. Amazing fact, my Duran mugs, because they are so well made, I have them all and they're in pristine condition, even though I've had them for, well, considerably more than a year now. You can see in what good condition this one is. Not a chip, not a crack, not a sign of discoloration on it. And that is true of all the others. They are the best mugs I've ever had or known. I say that without any hesitation at all. If you buy them, one or more of them, you will have a great, phenomenal mug. And if you buy a polo shirt like this one, you will have a great polo shirt too, because these are the best polo shirts you can have. 100% cotton. I've been a fan of polo shirts all my life, since I was a student, going to smart casual places. I've owned lots of polo shirts. These are without any question the best. As I said, James Bond would certainly have looked great in one of these. Sean Connery in his heyday would have looked great in one of these. They are fantastic polo shirts. I cannot recommend them too strongly. 100% cotton. And of course, they've got the double-headed eagle of the Duran there. And we've also got T-shirts, long-sleeved and short-sleeved. We've also got V-neck shirts. All our shirts are 100% cotton. We've also got hats, hoodies, and stickers. So come to the Duran, buy our ebooks, support the health workers, support the caterers in the United States. Do what you can to support people in this crisis. Support the Duran too, and be the owner of these great things.
Yes. Go to theduranshop.com. You'll find the link in the description box down below. And for the donations from the ebooks, you'll also find the link to Feed the Fight. That's where we're donating the ebook sales. And you can also make a direct donation to Feed the Fight. You'll find the link for that as well in the description box down below. Alexander McCurse, Editor-in-Chief of The Duran, thank you very much. Until next time, everybody, take care.